I mean, what happened was back in the end of 2006, I was just in so much despair about so many of our crises, the wars that we're in, the global warming, and I was looking for a way to write about it. And my, you know, I was angry, and I was kind of like, don't all you people realize what you're doing to the world? And one day I came into my house, and both air conditioners were on. I'd left them on all day long because I didn't want the apartment to be too hot when I got home. And I realized that if I was the type of person who left my air conditioners on all day long with no one home, then I was actually part of the problem. And I thought, what would happen if I decided to clean up my side of the street and, you know, live as environmentally as possible? What would that do to my life? And also, what might it create a story that attracted broad interest to our environmental crisis?
When did you get started on it?
The No Impact Man year was basically 2007. It was the end of November 2006 to November 2007.
Now, you conducted the project in close to four stages, creating no trash, reducing your carbon footprint, eating local and going without electricity, and conserving water.
It worked in phases. I mean, the first premise was that on the one hand, we would reduce our negative impact, and then on the other, reduced our positive impact by, you know, helping to plant trees or helping to remove trash from the rivers or this type of thing. So the idea was reduce negative impact plus increase positive impact would make no net impact, which scientifically in some ways doesn't make any sense. But really, the philosophical question was, could we live doing more good than harm?
Mm-hmm.
And then it worked in phases because actually, you know, just figuring out how to live without making trash in itself is complicated and takes time. So that was the first stage. We spent like a month like trying to figure out how to not make trash. And then the next was, how do we transport ourselves without causing carbon emissions? So, which ended up just being biking and walking. So we moved slowly through stages until for the last 6 months, all the stages were in place.
Okay. So which of these was the hardest part for you to deal with?
You know, because I could find no way to get sustainably produced electricity into our home, we ended up not using electricity at all, which meant that I washed our clothes by hand for a while. And that was by far the hardest. But what's interesting about that is that it tells us, you know, like, there's a limit to how much any of us are going to sacrifice. And it also tells us that, like, why should you have to, if to live sustainably, why should you have to not use electricity? Why should you not have to not use the laundry machine? What it tells us is that our systems are unsustainable, and that in addition to trying to live environmentally in our own lives, we actually need to collect together and let our politicians know that we want all our systems to be run in a way that protects the habitat that we depend upon for our health and our happiness and our security. And we shouldn't have to withdraw from the systems. We should actually be able to have the systems be changed. But it's both, because partly what the systems do is accommodate the way people want to live. Sometimes people argue about whether the change needs to come from the top or come from the bottom, and that strikes me as a silly argument, because it needs to come from both places. We need to work on the systems, and we need to work on our own lives at the same time.
Now, during the course of writing your book and during the course of the project, you met a lot of people that you probably wouldn't have met otherwise. What were some of the most enlightening things you came across?
The most interesting thing to me is that I met so many people who work hard to try and make a difference in the world. And I have a friend, Julia Butterfly Hill, and she says that extraordinary people are just extraordinary people. So that means people who accept their limitations and don't say, I can't do anything to help the world, but they because I'm an ordinary person, they just accept the fact that they're ordinary and that they have faults, and they try anyway. And I saw so many people working on water issues, people working on renewable energy issues, just going out there and working on what they cared about in the world.
So what are the three most effective ways a normal person can try to make a difference?
Well, I think that it's important. How we make a difference in the world should reflect who we are as a person. So I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all sort of thing, because as long as we're trying to fit ourselves inside other people's molds, it becomes difficult. So I think that the best thing to do is to figure out what suits you as a person. Like how not how should you help, but how do you want to help? So one thing, you know, and ways to think about it are like, I don't get enough exercise. I'd like to exercise more. Oh, and if I rode my bike, you know, then I would be using my car less. Or, you know, I have a cholesterol problem. So, well, if I ate less beef, that would be good for the environment and good for my cholesterol. Or, you know, I don't have as robust a social life as I would like. So actually volunteering for an environmental organization or becoming part of a political action group that's working for the environment would both help my isolation and help the world.
You did a lot of research and you conducted a lot of projects during this mega project of No Impact Man. Which are the ones that you still kind of feel closest to?
Well, what I'm interested in is in the synergy between human quality of life and environmental living. So for example, I like getting exercise and it helps me, so I continue to ride my bike. Or I trust local farmers more than I trust the directors of food corporations to produce food for my little girl, so I still prefer to eat local. Or, you know, I need to save money, so I still buy secondhand. Or, you know, I don't like paying 1,000 times the cost of tap water, so I avoid bottled water. And, you know, it just goes on and on. There's so many things that I wouldn't even think to tell you about because they're a part of my routine. But I think the most important thing is that I continue to use my voice. It's a horrible feeling if you have worries about the world and you don't feel as though you're able to do anything about it. It's a horrible feeling when you're worried about anything in your life and you don't feel you're able to do anything about it. I actually believe we're all capable of making the world be the kind of place we want it to be.
So what has life been post the No Impact Project?
We have a nonprofit called the No Impact Project, and basically it helps people choose ways of life that are both better for them and better for the environment. And it's at noimpactproject.org, and we have lots of initiatives, and we have free school curriculum there for teachers to download. We have an immersive educational experience called No Impact Week, where people live as environmentally as possible for a week and see what they discover, and lots of ways of learning about the environment that link human quality of life with the environment, as opposed to thinking of the environment as something that's outside of us.
How easy or difficult was it to mobilize people into action?
Well, we've found that over 40,000 people have done our central program, No Impact Week, now, and that's without any sort of advertising. People come to us because I think people do accept and perceive that there are problems in the world and linked to problems we have in our own lives. I mean, it's the same problems that are causing the mortgage crisis, that are causing the economic crisis, are the problems that are causing the environmental crisis. So I think people are really interested in looking for ways to live and for our whole culture to live that would be better for both us and our planet.
And what are some of the most interesting ways people have tried to become No Impact?
I mean, I think the most interesting ways is when people come together in community. So for example, there are, in some towns, people have formed renewable energy cooperatives where instead of putting solar panels on your own roof, they work together to buy solar panels for a whole group of families. So they actually, they share the cost, share the responsibility, they open up possibilities to other people, and they actually work together. And that, you know, that kind of working in community also goes for growing food in community gardens or you know, making your school or company zero waste, or just when people come together in community to work on this stuff, it's hugely powerful and satisfying for the people involved.